hello everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to a milestone, episode 100 of the Music Video Land podcast. My name is Adam. I did around almost all of them, 99 of the 100. I'm a co-founder of IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database, which is bringing you this podcast. And with me through almost all the episodes is Mr. Doug Klinger. He has a better record than me. He has 100 instead of 99. How are you, Doug?
Doing super good. Doing 100 good.
Yes. And then with us, as usual, is Mr. Adam Alexander of Fringe Music Fix. I was going to say recent addition to the podcast, but not so recent anymore. Adam has been with us for like 15 episodes, a long time.
Have you counted them? Oh, wait, let's say hello to Adam before I cut off.
Oh, yeah. Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Not bad. We're doing extra good today because this is one of those, sometimes just things kind of converge and milestones come together, because we had mentioned, I think, in a blog post at the end of the year of 2013 that we were going to hit 100,000 credits in March, and we just did a few hours ago. We're at 100,182. That has been a milestone that we've been looking for a long time, and it just happens to be on the same day that we're recording our 100th podcast.
It's fucking Illuminati shit right there. I'm drinking beer for this one. I brought beer back to the podcast for memory's sake.
You used to be doing a lot of drinking during podcasts.
I did. It was a sad day, sad time in my life where I was drinking a lot.
I think we're always, usually for almost all the episodes, especially ones where we had like big interviews, we definitely maybe had a beer beforehand. I think we tried to do an episode completely sober once, and it was awful.
Yeah, right. We did one in like the middle of the day.
Yeah.
Like forgot what to do.
So for this podcast, we're, as usual, as we always do, this is recording on Thursday, we always talk about the weekend music videos, and there were some interesting ones to talk about. But we're going to talk a little bit about just the podcast in general. Because we've done 100 episodes, we've done a lot of stuff, a lot of interviews, and we're going to play a few of our favorite moments from those podcasts. And they're not a lot, just a few, because, you know, if anybody has sort of recently started listening to the podcast, we used to do interviews on the podcast. We've actually done 75, IMVDB as a whole, and Doug in specifically, has done hundreds of interviews with directors and artists and DPs and commissioners and all sorts of stuff. But on the podcast, we have done, I think, around 75, 76 interviews, starting with episode 1, which was on February 15th, 2011, with the three people. Mike Diva, Petey Flo, and Josh Haraway, and we were talking to them about their video for The Left Right's I'm on Crack. This was just a few, maybe like 6 or 8 months before Mike Diva became internet famous for the Sexy Sax Man video. You remember that?
Yeah, and Late Show famous. I think they had him on Fallon or something like that.
They did.
Yeah, he did. He blew up. And now he's doing a lot more stuff. He does a lot of YouTube stuff, but I think he signed to Lord Danger now, where he's definitely directing music videos through them. So that's fun for Mike Diva.
I was thinking about if we wanted to thank anybody, and there's two people I think we should thank for sort of helping us out at the start of the podcast. One of them is Derek, my brother, who composed the filmed insert theme song that you hear at the beginning of. I don't know why we have a theme song. It seems sort of completely unnecessary. It's just like every time I listen to the podcast,
you have to sit through the song, just like waiting for the song. I mean, it's a great song, and we were so stoked about it when Derek sent it to us the first time, and we like played it, and we're like, oh, this is so perfect. This is exactly what we envisioned. But like, the question is, why were we envisioning anything? And anyway. But yeah, and, thanks, Derek. Yeah,
he also, if you listen to the old interview episodes, he also composed the interview transition music.
Yeah,
which we will also put here. Here's a clip of it right now. And that is, we usually played that when we were going in and out of interviews. Dimi, I can't remember, how do you pronounce her last name?
Pitchell.
Dimi Pitchell. So when we started the site, because we started the podcast not that long after we started the actual site. I think we started the site in late 2010, like November, and we were doing the podcast by February. And the original site sucked. If you went at the same time we started the podcast, if you went to the site, there was like 400 videos. It was a complete waste of everyone's time. But I think that, you know, it's hard to overstate the level of outsider that Doug and I were.
Not to say that we're anything more than that now.
Yeah, exactly. But
we were definitely that then.
So it was really cool of DME to hook, because otherwise we wouldn't have had a leg to stand on to get anybody to talk to us for the first episode. And, you know, the guys who are on the you know, the first few episodes are nothing to sneeze at all. We're talking about like Ryan Reichenfeld, episode 6, Isaac Renz, episode 5, Ryan McNeil, episode 4, Hiro Murai was on the episode 9, we had Ben Barnes, Jason Goldwatch, Alan Cordell, DJ Doug Pound was on episode 13. They put a lot of faith in us, so thank you guys for coming on the podcast.
And we use those clips heavily to try to get other people. It's like, here's us talking to this guy. Here's us here. And so, yeah, that's literally, I would stutter in my emails. It was weird. And
so,
but yeah, we're talking about all these. Yeah, I think we should play some. You brought up Hiro from when we had him on way back in May of 2011. And I think we should listen to one of these clips that we're going to listen to here with Hiro.
Yeah, so just to set this up, Hiro, at the time, he's directed a lot of amazing videos after our interview, of course. But at this point, he had directed the video for Airplanes by B.O.B. featuring whoever's a feature on the song.
Haley Williams,
right. And he had nominated for a VMA. We asked him if he'd gone to the VMAs, and he said no. And this is what he told us.
Well, did you end up going to the? Or did you get to go to the MTV Music Video Awards as a result of the video?
Well, actually, I opted out of going to the actual thing, and because they were only, you know, I kind of wanted to like celebrate with friends and whatnot. So we did this thing that we almost never do. We like rented a room in some fancy hotel, you know, and just got drunk and watched the VMAs. But the funny story about that is my editor Isaac Hagee, who's pretty much edited everything I've done, in the middle of the party during the VMAs, he ran through a glass plate door accidentally, because he just didn't see it, and just got cuts all over his body. And we had to rush into the emergency room. So there's like this big whole fiasco. There's just glass everywhere, and he's like bleeding out of his face. And we finally get him to the emergency room. And I finally come back to the living room where the TV is. I'm like, man, I cannot believe that happened.
Oh my gosh.
And then one of my friends who's watching the show the entire time comes up to me. He's like, oh, hey, the show's over. You didn't win anything.
So we've also had, strangely enough, we've had a lot of directors on the show, obviously. But we've also had a lot of rappers for some reason. We had Brother Ali.
For some reason, because we like rappers.
Right. It's one of those like subgroups that we've had a lot of people on from. We had Brother Ali, who I dialed the wrong number for, and somebody thought I was pranking when we originally called him.
Wish we searched for that clip and we couldn't find it. We wanted that to be in one of the clips from this show, but
long deleted. We had Prince EA. We had a few other people.
Prince E,
right? I think the one of the biggest rappers we talked to was Evidence, and we talked to him in March of 2012, so 2 years ago. And we talked to him specifically about the topic of rap hands, and this is, and check out this clip. You know, something you know, when you watch, you know, rap or hip-hop music videos, you don't really notice it, but once you mentioned it, I started seeing it everywhere, and you mentioned that MIA has really good rap hands, and Jay-Z and Drake. First of all, could you explain to us what rap hands are and how you develop them, especially for music videos?
I mean, rap. Somebody I retweeted. One of somebody put "rap hands come from preachers." And I was like, oh, that makes sense. You know, it's like you're summoning a higher force. You got to move your body. You got to move your hands and swing those arms. It's really difficult for somebody to talk, if you ever even noticed it. Like, next time you're having a passionate conversation, just try to sit on your hands. It's not, and the expression of moving your hands, it's just, the hands do everything. I read something the other day that said people get shot, you know, or stabbed or punched, they have the natural instinct to touch it. Like, that's going to do anything, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, well, I got stabbed, let me put my hands all over this right now, I'm dirty of that. But it's what you do, you just do that. I don't know why. Same thing happens with rap, you got to just move your hands. So, and a lot of people bite hand movements, and it tells me a lot about a person. Some people have really original hand movements, and I think that's an extension of you. And, you know, I can't like you all the way if you're doing Kanye's hand movements to the T. You know, I'm like, damn. Even if your rap is good, I'm like, damn, that's his hand.
You're plagiarizing his rap hands.
Man. So, yeah, it started out, I was watching MIA video, and she was just dancing really weird, but then she started, like, doing this little rap thing, and she started moving her hands kind of fresh. So, like, okay, at least she's got good rap hands. And then I started thinking about it, and Jay-Z, the most bitten rap hand of all time. Everybody does the Jay-Z left hand, whack it to the ground. And Kanye did that, and then Drake did it from Kanye. And yeah, the Jay-Z, I think, and then I said I got to go back and find out where Jay-Z got it from. I think that might be Jazz-O, or the Jazz. That's where Jay-Z, that was one of Jay-Z's mentors. I know Big Daddy Kane was also one of Jay-Z's mentors, so I have to go look at some old Kane, some old Jazz.
It's a learning curve.
Adam, have you ever listened to any of these old episodes?
A couple. Emily Kai Box, definitely, but not that many. I'd like to listen to more. I'll need to quit my job and listen to them all.
Well, actually, yeah, definitely. Or do it while you work. But it's funny that you say Emily.
That too.
It's funny that you say Emily Kai Box, because that's one of the clips that we have queued up here in our clip queued up machine that we've got, and it's sitting here ready. I just gotta hit this. It's C1 on this queue up machine. That was dumb. So yeah, we talked to Emily Kai Bach way back in April of 2012, and there's an interesting story about them shooting the Grimes Oblivion video that we wanted to share with you guys in this episode. So here it is.
One of the things that was I found really interesting about this video is that you guys, you know, looking at it, you kind of assume like, oh, you guys just went into the stadium and, you know, just kind of did it run and gun and just kind of, you know, were there without anybody knowing. But you guys actually had like media passes and had like a 35mm camera.
Yeah.
What was the decision? Because I know a lot of filmmakers nowadays would just say, "Oh, we'll just go in, and if we get kicked out, we get kicked out." What was the decision behind, you know, saying we got to do it the legitimate way?
It's funny you say legitimate. We got the media passes. Because there was a really sweet guy working security, and I explained it was for an art project, and he was like, I'm just finishing up film school, so I was a student at the time, so I kind of was explained to him that I was a film student, and I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but like Claire and Evan and myself, like, we look pretty young and like unassuming and unprofessional, and the cameras were what got us like taken back into the security place where they asked us questions, because the cameras are like massive, like intimidating. Like, we had two of them, and I mean, they were like, I don't know, you've seen like a BL like 35mm camera, it's like, I don't know, it's really difficult to even like lift off the ground. So we got questioned, and then by like me defending the like myself as like a student filmmaker that was making an art project, like, they were just like, oh, like, you know, like, here's media classes. And we were like, I guess they felt guilty because we had spent like $250 in tickets, and he was like, you should have just called us before if this is for school, you know. Kind of really like loose language. Like, I didn't, it was, we didn't lie, but we didn't, like, say the whole truth. And we, at the time, we didn't know that it was going to be, like, it became sort of an issue when I had to sign the video over to 4AD. Like, we didn't sell it, but they, like, wanted to put it on Vivo. And then in doing that, there was, like, some issues with, like, release forms and, you know, stadium, like, or like, permits for locations and stuff, and I didn't have any of that. So
how did you get that resolved?
Well, they just, like, they were like, well, you have to take responsibility as the director if anything happens, and I kind of just, like, crossed my fingers. I'm just like, I don't know, it hasn't been an issue since. I don't know. I've tried to get in contact with some people, because we shot it at a university football game. There were some people in the background that some of my friends knew, and we kind of, anyway, maybe we shouldn't, like, talk about so much, because it is a little bit sketchy, the whole,
we like sketchy things. It's crazy that, not crazy, but it's interesting, at the time we were talking to Emily, you know, we talked to her on the basis of the Oblivion video, which I think is still sort of a classic 2012 video, and just seeing her, you know, directorial output since then has been amazing. I mean, we named Afterlife by Arcade Fire one of our favorite videos, one of the top 10 videos of 2013.
And it was just won. She just won $5,000 from the Prism Prize for that video as well. Canadian music video.
She got a lot of mileage out of that video, definitely. So, one of the only people to be a two-peat on the podcast is Dugan O'Neill. We talked to him originally for an episode, and we did a thing where he just sort of joined us on the podcast, which was really fun. You can't do that with everybody, but you can do that with Dugan O'Neill. Dugan O'Neill is also an incredible sport for coming to our hotel room in L.A. in March of 2012, I think. No, 2012?
I don't remember.
One of those years. And doing an amazing skit with us when we had no clue what the hell we were doing.
Because he showed up, we were able to, like, tie a ridiculous storyline together because he showed up and helped us out. So, yeah. A few of the people we were kicking, anyway, talk.
Well, I was just going to say that, so Doug, you picked out this clip, and in your notes you said, so we got the Lonely Island part, but there's also Dugan talking about knowing Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, you don't remember that?
I do. Well, I remember him talking about some actress, but I didn't know it was Jennifer Lawrence, because this is a year or more before she became,
well, it was,
like,
right after,
super
it was,
famous.
The title of the episode, it was from May 2012. The title of the episode was Hunger Games Ninjas. And what happened was, like, we were just talking about, like, making things popular or something like that. And you're just like, he's like, yeah, just take two popular things that people love and put them together. Was mix anything with ninjas and you're good. So take something that people love and mix it with ninjas and you're good. And you were like, Hunger Games Ninjas. And he's like, oh, I knew Jennifer Lawrence. And that was that. That's one of the clips. It's a funny, the Lonely Island, Coney Island clip is a lot funnier. And so I think we should, cue that.
I was living actually in Hollywood, and in this area where there's, like, a coffee shop, really kind of cool area. And this was during the time, this is, like, maybe even pre-YouTube. And, you know, I was, like, just doing, like, you know, music videos, and just they weren't really going anywhere because there was no YouTube. And, like, but there was, like, the Lonely Island. Someone had shown me the Lonely Island website, and they were, like, the first guys making comedy, like, videos and putting them on the internet, like, the first people.
Oh, yeah, it's like 2006, 2005?
Yeah, it's like 2003, 2004. And so, I was just like, me and my friends are like the biggest fans of these guys, and, you know, I watched all their videos, and one day I saw Andy and I think Akiva outside of this coffee shop I was in, and so I ran outside without even really thinking about it, and I was like, yo, hey, man, Andy, yeah. My name's Dugan. I just want to tell you that I love Coney Island. I love it. And he looks at me kind of weird. I'm like, it's the best. Come on. I love it. It's so good. And he's like, yeah, it's Lonely Island. And then he just turned around and walked away. And I felt a little dumb. I felt a little dumb that I messed up the word.
So Yeah, well, Doug, you can introduce this to Sosa Mankesh, because this was your idea for a little, yeah, for a little, okay, shenanigans.
This is the stupidest idea. The podcast is full of bad ideas, and one of those ideas, we used to have it, we still kind of have a version of it now. When we had the interviews, we used to have, like, we called it the shell, where we would intro, talk about music videos, then intro the interview, and then after the interview, we would do picks of the week, and each week, both Adam and I would pick a music video and then just describe it. You know, just blow for blow.
Which is really, entertaining to hear someone describe a music video. Yeah.
Yeah. And so our joke was going to be in the episode that we interviewed Saman Kesh, that I was going to pick of the week his music video, and that it was going to seem like he came out of nowhere to interrupt me. And this is so dumb to describe. He came out of nowhere to interrupt me, and because I forgot to describe the fact that, like, we would record the shell at a different time, and, like, that was pretty obvious when, if you listen to the podcast, and we pretended like we had loyal listeners who would have picked up on that, and so we had Saman bust in to my pick of the week since I was picking his video and describe his video instead of me, and that's what this is what that sounded like.
Well, yeah, we gotta go first with your pick.
I'm super ready for my pick, because my pick of the week is actually by it's a music video directed by Saman. I was so inspired by the interview that I just had to pick a music video that he directed, and so I did. My pick of the week is a song called "Drunk," and it's by an artist named Ed Sirin.
This is Saman. I'm still on the call. It's Ed Sheeran. You're pronouncing it pretty weird.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Continue.
So I was just going to say that in this video, Ed is there, and he's, it looks like he's just, probably broken up with a girlfriend. And, he said,
I'm just gonna do this. Yeah, you're missing it. Okay, so it's basically about this guy who's tragically broken up with his girlfriend. Terribly, he's so sad. I mean, he might be on the verge of committing suicide. And while he's drinking, suddenly he has this whimsical moment where his cat comes to life, and saves his life. And there's this cliffhanger moment where you're not sure if the cat's real. That's right. Deep stuff. That's how you say it, Doug.
That probably is a lot better way to do a pick of the week than what we do. So with that, I will say check out the video, "Drunk," by what? Say the name again for me, because I'm not going to be able to.
It's Ed Sheeran.
You were asking for it. You were struggling.
I guess, yeah. Saman, why did you, I mean, I know I'm shitty, but why did you do that?
It's my fault. I'm in charge of audio, and I didn't notice he was still on. I apologize.
Is he still there?
He's probably gone. So there have been a few, like, shockers, I guess, over the few years we've done this podcast in terms of, like, just people kind of bringing up information that I didn't expect. Because we did a lot of research, and that's part of the reason why we've kind of gone on a little hiatus of doing interviews, is because they're very, very labor intensive. I really like this interview for two reasons. One, we talked to Ben Fee relatively shortly after he directed the "Ho Hey" by the Lumineers video, but before it became sort of like a ridiculous phenomenon in the U.S.
When I don't think you even had a million views by the
it
time.
It did not, no.
And now it has 100 million.
Yeah, and it's been on the chart. I mean, it was on the Hot 100 for a ridiculous amount of time. It might actually still be there. So he told us the whole story, and here it is.
I was wondering about this video, because this is kind of like the first video for the band Lumineers and stuff. You know, what is it like to kind of be putting out kind of a first visual for a band like this video is doing?
Well, I've known the Lumineers for a couple of years now, and I have a live music web series called The Sights of Sounds. And when I was living in Portland, I came across the Lumineers in a tiny, tiny bar one night doing an open-air show. and I fell in love with them. I thought they were amazing. Their energy was just so fun and happy, and they're appreciative and grateful humans. And I approached them about doing a couple videos for my web series, and you know, they obliged, and we immediately filmed that night at like 1:30 in the morning in an apartment, and we kind of bonded over that night and then over the following months. And then I moved to LA, and they would come and stay with me in Los Angeles. You know, during their travels, other people obviously picked up on their talent, so they got management and a record label. And being close to them and knowing what kind of people they were, I really had an idea of what I thought should be presented to the world on their behalf for the first time. I wanted to showcase their energy and how they incorporate people into their live sets, because they always ask people to sing with them and join in on the choruses and call and response. And they're all such cute little mammals. it's awesome. And it's great to watch them play, because they enjoy not only each other's company, but they enjoy the other people enjoying their music. It's just, it's a really, really positive experience. So, really long-winded answer. I just wanted to convey the energy that the band gives to the people during their shows to the people who see the video for the first time.
I think I'm gonna draw an audible here, because I put the, when I assembled the list of clips for our clip show, I kind of threw one in at the end, and I think we need to. I want to move that to now. I want to throw that one up now. And it was like a little bit of a scoop interview that we did, and we occasionally, especially after we got a cool field recorder, I would do some interviews in person. Occasionally, we would do some interviews in person, and one of those times was when Adam and I went down to Miami to interview Mayor LaVea about their music video work, in particular about the music video "Glazin'" by the Jacuzzi Boys. And we got down, there was some controversy around this video and a few conflicting storylines about where the video came from, and in this interview we got down to the bottom of it, and that's what we're doing right now here, right here.
Now that's kind of how the Jacuzzi Girls, or excuse me, Jacuzzi Boys Glazin' video was at least originally billed. Mm-hmm. But you know, according to your Vimeo page, it was actually commissioned by the band and stuff. Now, can you guys, or at least like influenced by the band, were you? Can you guys kind of clear the air of like exactly how that went down?
Here's exactly what happened. Jacuzzi Boys were, well, Danny, the bassist, friend of ours, and when they were coming out with a new album, it's like, oh, do you guys want to do a video for it? And then we listened to the album, we liked Glazin', so we had this idea of the, you know, vagina puppets. Like, oh, we're going to do it. It's like, oh, let me see if I can get you guys some money from the record label. The record label, Hardly Art, which is owned by Sub Pop, owned by Warner, but they're indie, quote unquote. They gave us like a tiny sum of money, like not really like a budget, but they gave us like, it's like embarrassing to even say the actual sum, to just like cover cost of materials or whatever. So then we made the video, and as we were making it, we're like, oh, this might be fun, like to not release it as us, but like to make up these personas of the different girls and put it different YouTube accounts, a Twitter account, like do all interviews like as them, which we ended up doing some of them. So when we released it, oh no, as we were going to release it, the band loves it. Oh, before we had done it, we had even sent like a list of the vaginas we were going to do, all this and that.
Like the characters, not
yeah,
the people
characters.
Playing them.
Right, no, not the people playing them.
Headshots, in case you were aware of these vaginas already.
It was the vaginas of the people playing.
Right.
LeBron James
Ronald
vagina.
McDonald's.
Okay. He's got one.
Everything was cool, but then once they saw the cut of the video, the record label decided that it... they couldn't do it. They couldn't release it because they said that they were afraid that George Lucas was going to sue them for the Jabba the Hutt vagina. They weren't okay with the Lord of the Rings vagina. And so then there was like this epic like email exchange where I would like try to explain satire and fair use and that they would not have it. We made a flow chart at one point why they were being assholes. Like, and so we ended up just leaking it, just releasing it, because they want us to cut, like, the parts that we thought were some of the funniest ones. They even want us to cut the LeBron James vagina, which it's just a black dude. Like,
it was a black dude with a basketball, and I'm like, yeah, the LeBron one has to go. And I'm like, y'all are racist. Like, how do you know who's who?
Yeah, but... so we leaked it, and then it went like crazy in the first like. So of course it got taken down from YouTube, whatever. But we had okayed it with Vimeo beforehand, and Vimeo is like more open to like artistic expression and all that. But then Hardly Art, the record label, would send cease and desist letters to anyone who was hosting it, including us. We got like cease and desist letters, and even like we were like, look, we'll give you your money back. We'll just say it's a fan video. We'll sign anything that says like you're not responsible. They weren't about it. Even the lead singer of the band's Facebook account got frozen because he uploaded the video. But by then it was too late because we had put a download link in the YouTube. So it was all over the torrents, all over everywhere, and it keeps getting uploaded. And for a moment, for a period, we were told that they had an intern whose only job it was to look for that video online and send cease and desist letters.
That's so sad.
But then we made our own website, which... for legal purposes, we had to host on the same host that it's in Norway. It's where WikiLeaks and like NAMBLA's website is hosted. Like they just don't.
So that stuff is true. Like the Jacuzzi Gals portion, that's like folklore
we
kind
made
of
that
like.
Up, yeah.
And then, but the fact that it's having to be hosted on WikiLeaks and all of the anger from the label, that's actually true.
And so that was the hottest interview I've ever done.
It was very warm outside.
Super hot. It was like November in Florida, and we were outside, and it was very, very hot.
No, it wasn't. Was it November? No, it was July. July 4th you came down, I think, because it was came out July 20th, 2012.
Oh, well, look at that. I'm very wrong about things. and people have told a lot of stories on the podcast, and, you know, obviously they've told a lot of stories about... everything. I guess that's what you do when you're on a podcast. You tell stories. So here, the clip you're about to hear is music video director Cameron Duddy talking about one of the craziest stories we ever heard throughout our episodes on the podcast of how someone got into directing music videos. And it all has to do with a jacket and Mr. Bruno Mars.
Around that time, met Bruno Mars because my wife took the photos for his first... press packet before he was anybody. She got hired by a guy named Nick Billardello at Atlantic Records, and I was unemployed, and she was like, you want to come and shoot B-roll, you know? I said, sure, and I came down there, and this guy was there. It was Bruno Mars, and he was wearing this little fedora, and I filmed all day, and he was totally entertaining, and I was wearing this jean jacket, and... he was vibing a jean jacket, and like between shots, he came up to me and he was like, dude, let me buy that jean jacket off you. He's like, can I buy it off you? I said, no, man, this is my favorite jean jacket. This thing fits me perfectly. And he said, well, let me wear it. So I let him wear it for the shots. And at the end of the day, he's like, dude, I'll give you $300 for this thing. And I relented. I said, no, dude, I can't. And this is maybe, by the way, when you hear the end of this story, this could be the pivotal moment of my whole career. I'm telling you, it's a jean jacket. And I said no to the $300, even though I paid $45 for it. And I cut together the B-roll from that day. And I worked with this guy, Nick Billardello, who's a creative director at Atlantic, with the video footage that I had. And we ended up editing, like, on the side for no money, this, like, rough cut to the other side, which was a B-side single for his first album. And it came out really great. So the label ended up like paying me a couple bucks to make a couple revisions. And it was like a slam dunk for Nick, who had like pulled this rabbit out of the hat for no money. And they had this content for a kid who didn't have any content, you know, Bruno Mars. They hadn't done any music videos for him yet. So it was a win-win. And I remember Nick calling me. He's like, yeah, we fucking crushed it, dude. And, you know, they're good. He's about to shoot his first huge music video for a song called Just the Way You Are. He's like, I'm lobbying hard for me and you to co-direct it. And dude, I'm piss poor broke at the time. Like, I don't have any jobs, you know, I'm just like on Craigslist trying to like edit people's reels and shit, you know? And so I'm thinking, like, yeah, fuck yeah, dude. I don't know anything. This is going to happen. And they called me. And I forget who even called, but they were like, hey, is this Cameron Diddy? Yeah. He's like, oh, I'm calling about the Bruno Mars music video for Just the Way You Are. And I'm thinking, like, fuck, dude, this is it. This is how they're going to ask me to do the music video. And she goes, yeah, I'm the wardrobe stylist. Can Bruno borrow your jacket for the video? And I was like, fuck. Of course I said yes, you know, but I said, can I at least do – I said yes, and I called Nick, and I'm like, dude, I just got, like, the wind knocked out of me. He's like, I know, fuck, I'm sorry. I said, well, can I at least do the behind the scenes if I let them borrow the jacket? And they said, sure. So I showed up, and I did the behind the scenes. And I got to see Bruno again, and I got to see Philip Lawrence again, and like, we totally had a good time doing this behind the scenes. We were laughing and shit. And I got to stay in the you know, the gravitational pull of Bruno at that point, and then from there I kept doing the behind the scenes, and I did behind the scenes on Nabil's video for Grenade, and I did a behind the scenes on the first Lazy song. So I get the call. At this point I'm running like a sort of mini production company, doing a bunch of Atlantic's like behind the scenes shit. And for Bruno stuff, I'd actually show up and shoot. Otherwise, I'd hire these kids to go out, and I would sort of produce the stuff on the side. I was also – okay, well, no, I wasn't with Boulevard yet. So, you know, I'm just doing shit to make ends meet. And I got the call to do the Lazy song. I remember I was in Vegas working on an event, like, you know, building a booth for L'Oreal at the fucking, you know, some clothing show. And – So we go. I went to the shoot. It starred Leonard Nimoy. This guy named Nez directed it. Super sweet guy, great guy. It was a 2-day shoot, and for whatever reason, Bruno wasn't in it, and whatever, blah blah blah. This whole thing went down. I think Bruno sort of wrote the single off at the time, and I was there, and we did like a Christopher Guest behind the scenes type thing. Where, like, got everyone to talk shit about each other in these candid interviews. I even got David Saslow, now the GM of Atlantic Records, then the head of video commissioning, to talk shit about Bruno, and everyone's talking shit about each other. It was this funny, like, you know, joke that we all had played on each other and done, and it came out really cool. The behind the scenes was really funny. And then a month later, I got a call. And, yo, we're not going with that first video. His manager called me and said, we're not going to go with that first video, but the behind the scenes was really good, man. And you know, I'd been on tour with Bruno at the time, and I had a solid relationship with him, and I'd been doing a lot of his videography and stuff. We'd rap about, you know, art and music, and got to know each other artistically like that. And he was like, do you have an idea for a Lazy song? And I said, sure, yeah, let me call you back in like 30 minutes. I'm on a job. You know, I was like building something at the time, and I didn't have it, so I like riffed when I called him back, and from there we sort of created what the Lazy song is now.
Yeah, let's do the Saul Levitz clip. Saul Levitz is a music video commissioner, the only music video commissioner that we had on the podcast thus far, I guess. And
for Sony Columbia.
Yes, exactly. And he was in our favorite music video of 2012, Houdini, directed by Daniels. And his role wasn't just like standing in the background. He had like a kind of like a dramatic role. So he told us a story about how he ended up in that music video.
Yeah, we definitely want to hear how you ended up being in it also.
Okay. So it was kind of funny. The band has two managers, Brent and Brett. And originally, we show up on the first day of shooting. We're really kind of shooting linearly. Is that the right word? Linearly.
I think that's close. I think, yeah, I don't know it either.
And they're like, hey, is Brett here? He said he was going to be in the video. And just to back up a little bit, Daniels are kind of obsessed with, like, meta casting. They want everything to be very, like, real, there to be some inside joke. involved in it. Like, if you could bring your family down and they put them in the video, or like your long lost cousin or somebody who waited a table for you that morning. They want to have all those connections kind of involved to heighten the experience for everybody. And, you know, they had this role in there, which was the band manager and one of the real managers they had wanted to play. And we get to set and they're like, okay, we got to do this shot. Is Brett here? And I'm like, no, he's not here. Let me call him. He's like, because we got to get started shooting. So I give Brett a call. And I'm like, hey, the guy said you're supposed to be in the video and that they're about to shoot. Are you almost here? And he's like, I never said that. I never in the video. I told him I didn't want to be in the video. And I'm like, okay. So I called the other manager. I was like, do you want to do it? But you got to get here soon because they want to shoot. And he's like, no way. He was just more like stone faced. Like, I don't show up in videos. Okay, so I go back to Dan. I'm like, look, they said there was a miscommunication here. They're not going to do it. And literally, they kind of scan everyone that's standing around. And they come back to me, and they're like, do you want to do it? And I'm like, nah, I got to kind of do my thing as the commissioner on set. And they're like, look, it's one thing. Like, you just got to go. We'll put you in this sweater, and you just have to do this look. And I was kind of like, okay, assuming, honestly, that it was one shot. So I was going to go in, do a reaction or whatever, and that was going to be the end of it. It turned out we did it. Everybody, including the band, like was so like, oh, wow. And I guess I got caught up in all that. And then they were like, okay, by the way, like, you know, this is a role that, you know, it was a 2-day shoot that we're going to have to go back to. So I was like, okay. And originally, I would have been like, no, thinking it was just one shot, but I think everybody kind of tricked me into it. And like, you're co-starring with the band in this video. And up the whole thing that was all about it and getting meta on it and digging into my character. And I loved it because I think the video, I mean, it's hard for me to kind of separate, like, this is one of the best videos I've ever worked on. And I showed it to them, and they're like, of course it is. You're in it.
So there you have it. Those are some of our favorite moments of all 100 episodes of the podcast. When you look at this list, I mean, of episodes, it's kind of, you know, we don't really look back on stuff a lot. It's pretty interesting the number of and the sort of the breadth of people we talk to over the podcast. And I would encourage you, if you want to check it out, everything is available online. We're in the process of putting everything on SoundCloud.
But they're all on the site.
Yeah, you can just listen to them, the MP3s or whatever. But if you just go to imvdb.com/podcast, you'll get everything, including the show, you know, notes, links to music videos that we mentioned, all sorts of stuff.
And if we didn't really, you know, I listened to a lot of these. We didn't really have clips for them all, but some really great interviews, you know, from the past. Definitely, as you mentioned, the from really early on, the Jason Goldwatch one was great. Josh Forbes was really good. Dan Ekman had some interesting moments. All the ones with Dugan O'Neill, Isgrav Shakara, Todd Ankasawan, Warren Fu, A.G. Rojas. Those are all some really great Daniels. Those are some other ones that I really want to also direct you to. Gosh, Dave Ma.
Michael Q. Schmidt.
Schmidt, who also is in our dumb video. So I mean,
Jonathan Delgado, Simon Kesh, obviously, LeBlanc and Cudmore, who also just won an award at the Prism Prize. Forklops, who do interactive music videos. Jonathan Wells, who runs
Ellis Ball, right after his Breeze Blocks video release, and before he did a lot of other sweet, awesome music videos.
Timothy Cicenti, Caroline Bottomley from Radar Music Videos, Hannah Lux Davis from December 2012. She's done a lot of amazing videos since then, so it's interesting to listen to that video. Declan Whitebloom, who's worked with Taylor Swift and many others. James Larice of Syndrome. We have Dave Ma, Shane Drake, Cameron Duddy. It's been a really pretty awesome list of names on there.
So go listen to them talk about their music videos. Other than these clips that we pulled out, which was kind of random, but then
there were the shit episodes.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna add something to that. Actually, as awesome as it is, the 100th episode in that, at least in regards to the TV world, when you do a best of episode, you're very close to jumping shark. So expecting that, like, within two or three podcasts from now, we're just going to lose the format, and we're going to bring in, like, people that have nothing to do with music videos.
No, you're right.
Just random homeless people. Yeah, this
Pat
might
Oswald
be.
Pat Oswalt is going to come on and talk about his whatever he wants to talk about.
I think we need gimmicks now going forward. Like, next week, Adam's dogs can host the podcast. That'll be next week's episode. Well, I think we should just do it every week.
Well, I think
something crazy.
We need to address the sort of shift in tone, because Adam, I think the first episode you joined us on was episode 75, ASAP Fairholme, I think. Was the name of the podcast.
It's close,
And so it's March now, so that's a substantial amount of time. So that's there have kind of been two kind of eras of the podcast, you know, sort of before Adam and after Adam. And we've kind of shifted a little bit. And, you know, like I mentioned, interviews take a lot of work. We might go back to interviews. We're concentrating on the site right now.
But they'll sprinkle in. You'll see some.
Definitely, yeah.
They haven't gone. They haven't gone away.
But Adam...
And this clip show reinforces that.
But Adam Alexander has been a huge part of the podcast going forward. Adam, you've added a third voice. It was just Doug and I for 75 episodes, or 74, I should say.
I think this this calls for the applause loop from GarageBand. Put that in there. Thanks, Adam. Thanks. That was sweet.
Now as we march on, we have many more episodes to go. We have many more music videos to talk about, and this week is just like the rest of them. We have stuff to talk about, and
we should.
I think we should do it. Let's just shed all of our sentimentality of our 100 episodes. That's all gone. We've thanked everybody. We've listened to the clips. Now we are moving on to the never ending. Stream of music videos that fall into our laps every day.
Yeah.
And I think I want to start off with a music video that was, I think it may have the award for the most amount of credits in our database.
Yeah, I think it gets it.
And it is currently sitting at a comfortable lead with close to 19 million views. And that is GUI by Lady Gaga, directed by Lady Gaga.
To keep things brief, we should talk about the 3-minute edit, though.
Is there a 3-minute edit?
Yeah. Oh, what the heck? Where's that? That's going to push her over 20 mil.
That one just came out today.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't
it's
even
a 3-minute it bit. It's basically just the GUI portion of the video, just the song, just that song.
Well, to be fair, 4 minutes of the 11-minute version are credits.
True enough.
There are a lot of credits. And you're right, Adam, because I was watching this earlier today, and a lot of, like, maybe like there's like a three minute prologue, which is clips of other songs from the album, which is something that she hasn't really, at least to my knowledge, done before. They've always been sort of singular ones. And obviously, this is billed as a video just for Guy, but they wanted to get those extra songs in there.
She's had intros and stuff and extended length videos, but yeah, I don't think she's done one with clips. You're probably right on that.
And they all fit together into sort of the whole thing, I guess. this is at the point of the album cycle. You know, remember this single is, I think, the third from Art Pop, which is, you know, at the end of last year, around September, there were kind of the three amigos of women... pop artists. There was Lady Gaga with Art Pop, Katy Perry with Prism, and Miley Cyrus with Bangers. And I don't know, it feels like, you know, I remember Lady Gaga had that Thanksgiving special. I don't know if you guys ever watched that. The Thanksgiving special
with the Muppets,
yeah, which was awful.
And I was it's fun. Well, Muppets are awesome.
It was
Come on.
There were very few Muppets. That's the thing.
That's true.
Very self-indulgent. And for a while, there was that. I felt like the Lady Gaga album was kind of fading into obscurity. We had that great video for Applause, but Applause and that video was the branding video. You know, the first kind of shot in the dark branding video. Now we're getting to the point of the album cycle. For Lady Gaga's last album, we were getting like the Marry the Night territory, which is of a similar length, although did not have the credits. So it was an actual 10-minute video directed by Lady Gaga that came out and, you know, was around like the third or fourth single from the album. But now it seems like this, I mean, this video...
And was, that video was terrible.
That was an awful video. But now we're... Now it feels like a little bit more of a revival, actually, than, like, kind of bogging it down. I don't know if you guys felt the same way. But, I mean, this has been a substantially popular video.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a great Gaga video, for sure. I like it a lot, actually. It's a good one. And you're right, it is sort of a return to form. It reminds me of some of her better videos, definitely. Sort of reminiscent of Born This Way and Bad Romance. Well, maybe not Born This Way, but definitely has a Bad Romance vibe to it. Maybe not as dark, but yeah.
Definitely. Cool. And, you know, one of the interesting things about this is it was filmed at the Hearst Castle in California. Or Hearst Mansion, sorry. I think it's called the Hearst Castle officially, which is a mansion that was built by William Randolph Hearst, who was the inspiration for Citizen Kane, who sort of operated this mansion in the 20s and 30s, which is now owned by the state of California and operated as a you know, historical site. But they are very, very stingy with granting access to this castle for filming, with the amount of, like, mansion rapper videos we see coming down the pipeline, I can see why. Because I think they would all love to film this castle. But they let Lady Gaga film there, and part of the whole deal, apparently, was a very large donation to the foundation, as well as a PSA that Lady Gaga did for the preservation of the castle. So there was, you know, the location of this plays a huge role in it.
Yeah, and she kept it alive for a couple of years.
Definitely. I think it was like a $250,000 contribution.
Yeah.
Is what I read.
I think you put that on the... Like, that event essentially is on the budget of the video, then.
I would think so, yeah. And, you know, like we mentioned, this has a ton of credits. And this has the only... there were a few credits that we had to add for this. One of them was a sculptor, and I put in the notes box, Lego sculptor. Nathan Sawaya is credited as Lego sculptor, the only person in the database to be credited as that. And there is a tiny, very, very small, maybe 2 or 3 second bit where Lady Gaga has like a Lego torso in her actual head. There's a lot of one-off stuff in this video that leads to a very, very large art department.
That's one of the things. There's a lot of really short shots that I would like to see a little bit more of that seem to cut very quickly. Like the shot with I'm not sure exact. It's such a quick shot that I only really see Michael Jackson emerging, and maybe the Pope is one of the figures. But I get what they're doing. They've got like a bunch of iconic figures that emerge, but so short. I wish that would have been used more prominently. It's a cool idea.
Yeah, that was one of those ideas where it sort of kind of hinted at, but nothing has really played out. This was a huge, huge video. Director of photography was Thomas Kloss. Editor was Harvey White.
Shakira.
Adam, did you watch the Shakira video?
I did. It had actually back to the Hunger Games again. It has a bit of a Catching Fire kind of a theme to it with the burning dress.
She catches fire.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, there's a fiery dress in Catching Fire too, which is reminiscent of this.
So this one was directed by our good friends at the Uprising Creative. Directed by they usually have several
teams.
People. Yeah, teams in the director chair.
Well, so. Mostly it's these three guys.
Yeah, yeah. Darren Craig, Jonathan Craven, and Jeff Nicholas, who make up the Uprising Creative, so that makes sense. And I was really excited when I saw that they were doing this video, because they've done a lot of fantastic work lately.
It's so interesting that, like, they just started directing videos. Like, they really kind of, as music video directors, came on the scene with that Justin Timberlake video last year. And then since then, they've just, like, oh, yeah, just Rihanna, Shakira, just, like, huge, huge name artists. It's like, we'll just take these jobs, no problem. And I think they do a great job, right? What'd you think of Empire?
I thought this was a really great video. I'm a big fan of Shakira, and I think in her past career, maybe like past earlier than 2009 and earlier, I feel like she's been sort of mishandled in terms of music videos. There are some exceptions to that, but I haven't really been super excited about some of her music videos. But this one was really a lot markedly classier, especially when you kind of compare it to the Can't Remember to Forget You video with Joseph Kahn.
Yeah.
Or directed by Joseph Kahn. But yeah, Adam, you're right. It definitely had the Catching Fire thing with the dress. There was a lot of really beautiful shots in this. I'm not sure where they shot it. Yeah. And the dress that Shakira wears is off-white, appropriately. But she is, I don't know, she could probably move some wedding dresses with this. I don't know.
Are you saying off-white? You're suggesting that Shakira has had sex before?
I don't know. I'm like 60% sure Shakira has had sex.
Yeah, I think 60%. All right, I'm with you there.
But there's some beautiful, beautiful, like, obviously she's not in front of a green screen. They went to wherever this was shot and got these shots. It's pretty amazing. This might be a kind of career transition video for Shakira because, you know, she's 37. In the She-Wolf era, she was, you know, early 30s, and she was definitely still continuing the sexy Shakira thing. And, you know, obviously with the Can't Remember to Forget You video, she was continuing that as well. But, you know, she's on The Voice. She's kind of settling into this reality TV slash, you know, kind of more, you know, comfortable career mode. And this video definitely fits into that really well. Because it's still really classy. It's still a really great video. But it's not... and, you know, she's putting up huge numbers from it. But it's not anything too crazy like her, you know, Hips Don't Lie you know, Waka Waka, This Time for Africa Days.
Yeah. Just so everyone's clear, I'm Team Blake Shelton on The Voice. I don't know about you guys.
Do you get The Voice in Canada, Adam?
Yeah, and I do watch it. I'm not Team Blake Shelton. I would actually probably have to say I do like Blake Shelton, but in terms of coaching, I got to go with Adam on that.
I
think so. I think his selections mesh up with mine more often than not.
What about Usher? How's Usher?
Usher was good too, but he was only on for one season, right? And then they brought back.
On it now.
Is he back on again?
He's back.
Oh, and I'm missing out then because he was good. Switching. He was a good coach. I thought he was good too.
They bounced this, between Usher.
CeeLo's gone though. CeeLo's gone.
Well, so it's funny. They've done four seasons of The Voice, and two of the seasons have been CeeLo. Like, they keep going back and forth. They keep swapping CeeLo and Usher, and they keep swapping Christina Aguilera and Shakira now. They've gone back and forth now.
So Shakira back?
Shakira is back now, too, yeah.
Oh, I missed it, because I liked Shakira was awesome. She was probably
the best.
But it's
weird. They're like, we got the white guys. We know what white guys we want. It's the black guy and the Spanish lady that we can't get right. We can't figure it out.
Now, I have never... Now, here's a confession. I've never seen this show before. Honest to goodness, I've never seen an episode of The Voice.
Well, you clearly don't live with my parents.
Are they big Voice fans?
No, they just watch whatever network The Voice comes on, though, and so I see the commercials.
NBC. But it's funny because in Canada, you know, I talked to my grandmother in Canada, and for some, and when I go there, some shows are just like imported wholesale. Like, it's just like, here's The Voice. There's no like nationality to it, but they do have like Canadian versions for things. Like, for instance, Canadian Idol instead of American Idol, obviously. But the best one that I've yet to see an episode of in Canada, and Adam, I don't know if you've seen this, instead of Dancing with the Stars, they apparently have a show called Blades of Glory.
Yes, they do.
And instead of like just like B celebrities, they have hockey players, and it's figure skating. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you got it.
He's so the shame and disappointment in Adam Alexander's voice.
Because every time my grandmother,
I have not ever seen an episode of that, but I do know that it exists.
I fucking never watched that.
Yeah, because every time my nana is talking about that, in the back of my mind, I'm like, this show can't be real. This can't be a thing that exists, and I always forget to Google it. So anyway, in the show notes, you'll find a link to Google results for Blades of Steel.
To every episode of Blades.
So Adam, do you have anything that we should be looking at for this week?
Wow, real quick. What pops to mind?
No, you can take all. We don't have any time restrictions here.
Nobody gives a shit.
There's 100 hours of us talking. We can keep go a little longer.
Probably the one that sticks out for me the most right now, without having a look at what came out, is the Pains of Being Pure at Heart video from earlier sometime this week. The song was called Simple and... Is it Simple and Sure?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that one. That's the one. That one sticks out for me. That was a really great video. It kind of has black and white, and it kind of has like the GIF kind of a style to it, where they like take a frame and they kind of like repeat it back and forth, like a bunch of short little sequences like that. But then it also advances a plot that's really interesting too. There's a little bit of a storyline to the whole thing, and it's kind of like a dinner party that goes wacky and gets messy. And yeah, that one there, I really enjoy that video. That one's sticking out for me so far at this point in the week.
My audio dropped out for a second. Did you say the name? Did you say the director?
No, I didn't. It's Ali Sizepin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her
name is hard to say, but man, she makes some fucking great music videos.
Yeah,
too.
Definitely.
She's good. Like I'm a massive fan of hers.
Me too.
She makes some fantastic music videos. Really unique stuff. Really unique stuff.
And she operates like I don't really know how that all works. Like she operates as Bangs, correct? Is it a collective of directors?
Yeah, it's not directors. It's like basically like Bangs is what her and the DP and the producer all work together. Owen Donovan is the director of photography, and Trace Henderson, the producer, and the three of them, they make up Bangs. I believe that's how it works.
They make fucking awesome music videos.
Oh man, gosh. out of New York City. Yeah, really, really great stuff. That's probably my favorite of the week too. But I'm gonna tell you another one I liked because I'm gonna say it's my turn if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
I really liked this Good Mistake video by Mr. Little Jeans, directed by Ian and Cooper. Did you guys watch this video?
Another cool one.
This is a vibey-ass video. Vibey, I like that word now. I say that.
what's your take on the sort of the story or the symbolism of this one? I have a bit of one.
All right, you go, because this was so, like...
Maybe you could tell me if you think it makes sense. I just think that, so basically the central character is a truck driver, mm-hmm. and I kind of got the feeling that maybe he's sort of, like, reliving his memories, but kind of in a visual sense, like... Do you kind of get that feeling? He looks at the picture of him and his and a wife or a girlfriend.
Well, he's
at one
obviously
point.
Like depressed about something, right? He's taking all these pills and he's drinking while driving, and
yeah,
you know. So it's I think that's like some depression elements going on as well, but definitely like some reminiscing going on.
Yeah, especially in the last portion there. Yeah, for sure. That was the feeling that I got from it. But yeah, you're right. Like in terms of mood and everything, it's definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And the way they blend the performance stuff with the narrative is also really good. It takes place basically mainly on a highway, kind of a desolate highway, and at like a truck stop. And I'm not super familiar with Mr. Little Jeans. Are you, Adam?
Which Adam?
Either
Adam.
I am not.
Oh, okay. So I am.
Mr. Little. It's just that girl, right? That's Mr. Little Jeans. She goes by that. Right? Do I have that right?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, she's a pop artist, and she is definitely. She might have sometimes the way those groups work is they'll have like a producer that's always a part of that act as well. So it might be a case of that. But yeah, no, it's basically her. And she just dropped an album this week, Pocket Knife.
Is it awesome?
It's pretty good. I've only given it a once through, but I'm definitely a fan. And I'd heard some singles prior too, so she's good.
And those her performance, she's like performing in like this smoked out phone booth for a lot of
the phone booth is awesome.
And yeah, gosh, so cool. And she's really like interesting to watch. And there's a lot of backlit stuff with her as well. And yeah, I was just really interested with this video. And Ian and Cooper, obviously, I saw at South by Southwest. They won for their Back to Me video by Joel Compass while there. And it's just really interesting. This is just a personal thing for me, is that I drove to South by Southwest, as you guys know, and I spent some time at the night at truck stops, and that like connects with Ian Cooper.
What kind of truck stops?
I mean, just regular. I didn't do any riff-raffian stuff, but I didn't do any like something about Mary stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, truck stop. I love road trips because you can get I mean, the places where you stop, there's so many snacks. It's a lot of different snacks.
Oh, yeah, right. So much snacks. And you get them. You get
them
all.
In the States. The snacks at the truck stops are better in the States.
And they are. Oh. It's your excuse. It's your
they
excuse
are much
to eat,
better.
Like, peanut M&Ms and Rangaloos.
Well, we don't have Aero bars down here, and that kind of bums me out.
I don't know. You guys have way better snacks. Way, way better. I just have to say that.
So you guys have these weird M&M's Smarties that come in little cardboard rectangle tubes.
Smarties aren't gross. Smarties are gross.
They are.
I just had a Smarties McFlurry today. It was fucking
not
awesome.
Not another fucking word about Smarties, I swear.
Oh, man. When I was a kid, we used to have McDonald's pizza in Canada. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. You guys that are gross. That was good shit, too.
Everyone's gross.
Good. That's pretty everyone's good pizza, gross. Yeah. Everyone's gross. I've been reading about Shakira's personal life.
That's weird. So do you not have a favorite music video for this week?
The Order in the Court by Adonis Adonis video. Doug, yeah,
Actually, the cell song by Fan Farlow is kind of similarly animated, but I like them both a lot, and so I picked them both. But yeah, I really like that Order in the Court one as well. It's just really like weird but old style, almost like greeting card style animation, or
kind of like
or
a Monty Python.
Yeah, that's a better way to describe it. Greeting card style.
I felt like I was watching Monty Python. It's
yeah, cool. That's way better. Is it Terry Gilliam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it definitely has shades of that, and I think one of the other things it has shades of is, I don't know, it's been a long time since I took an art history class and this kind of thing, of just, you know, it reminds me of like the illustrations for like a Dante's Inferno.
You're right.
It brings that stuff to life.
Definitely, and there actually, you can tell there are pieces of this that are actual paintings.
Yeah, right. And they animate them together and like put them on like, put them in weird, make them do weird.
Yeah, and it is a very interesting mix. It is sort of, this is the sort of music video I think would be a complete trip to watch high. So
and that being said, also the band themselves are kind of a crazy awesome weird band too, so you have to have something like a crazy awesome visual to go with Adonis, and this is definitely one of those. It's crazy.
So if you have any, if you get your psychedelics together, put them in a box and send them to Adam Fairholme, care of IMBDB. And let Adam help Adam get high to watch Order in the Court by Adonis Adonis. Please, for our 100th episode, help us do that.
Otherwise, I'm just going to smoke the first thing I find when I walk outside.
Yep. Gross.
So I think that may be our 100th episode, you guys. Where do we go from here? It's like, you know, what happens next? I guess we have to do some soul searching. So anyway, thank you everybody who's ever been on the podcast up until this point. Go and if you're, you know, working during the day, put on one of our channels. Put on Music Video Land or Fringe Music Fix, which has been my jam for the last few days. Just plays music videos one after the other. And we'll see you guys at 101. So it's funny you mentioned Hunger Games because I'm looking through our Twitter. I don't know if Adam, if you saw this tweet. We premiered a video the other day.
I did see a bit of that.
And did you see this guy's tweet? Hold on. It's back a ways. Hold on. Hey, Nicholas Miguelis. Sean Ashley Collins tweeted, My aunt wrote Hunger Games. Like, hold on, I'm... Yeah, here we go. My aunt wrote the Hunger Games. Watch my new video from Skip Whitman. This is the director, Sean Ashley Collins.
That's not true, though.
Well, hold on. So I'm like, okay, well, Sean Ashley Collins. Maybe. Well, let's just see. So I looked up Hunger Games.
And yeah, her last name is... But the-
It was by Suzanne Collins. Yeah, but that's one of his.
That's a joke, though. I'm pretty sure because if you remember, we also interviewed Sean a year or two ago, and he about his song "Jews and Blacks." And one of the other lines, you know, and one of the other lines of that song, if you remember, one of my favorite quotables from that. That was a video chats interview, so we can't go to any of this sound. But if you remember one quote from that interview, he's like, I had mad backpacks and stuff when he was talking about, like, his grandma wanting him to bring his camera equipment home. Anyway, that was a – sorry. I remember too much about this. But anyway, he also, like, in that song alludes to the fact that, like, Phil Collins is his uncle. And that can't both be true. Phil Collins can't be his uncle and his aunt. It can't be the Hunger Games lady.
Well, hold on. Let's see if Suzanne Collins is related to Phil Collins. Hold on. Here we go.
Because that would be – we would know that already, or someone would know that.
Well, there's a lot of things to know in the world. Okay, so I just did a, I did a search for Phil Collins on Suzanne Collins' Wikipedia page. Let me do a Google for – Suzanne Collins, Phil Collins.
Should we just try to patronage Sean right now in the middle of our clip show? And
here we go. Wiki Answers, which is also always completely 100% correct,
mm-hmm.
Is author Suzanne Collins related to singer Phil Collins? Click to see answer. No, that's it. That's all it says.
Okay, so we're good.